broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. This is the broadcast for August 27th in the year of our Lord, 2020. This is hour two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Our guest, Pete Sepp, president of National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. Welcome back, my friend.
Great to be here.
Man, there's so much to discuss, I don't even know where to start. Did you know there's a laptop shortage, sir?
A laptop shortage?
Yes, sir.
Wow. And well, so, I imagine a lot of people ordering those for their kids right now.
Yeah, what I find fascinating is USA Today blames it on a double whammy. They blame it on the COVID and on President Trump and his tariffs. And I find that an interesting point-the-finger blame game. And the reason that I bring this up is because laptop shortages are merely a symptom of reality. They're a symptom of what we're facing, not only economically, but et cetera, et cetera. And I don't want to blame President Trump and the tariffs or blame the Chinese or blame the COVID or blame anything else. What I want to do is take a step back and say, what can we do to remedy the situation for the American people? What's the most prudent way to set aside our differences and double down and work together to say, let's bring back the economy, let's bring back productivity, let's bring back savings, let's find ways to make sure that businesses can operate. How come we can't just get there in this crisis time?
Yeah, unfortunately, politics can still rule, and that's the problem here in Washington, D.C. I suppose it's probably better for taxpayers that the Senate and the House could not come up with a sufficiently efficacious deal, a so-called Phase 4 COVID relief package to send to the president's desk. They left town for several weeks. They'll be coming back in September to try again, but when they try again, are we just going to spend more money aimlessly, or are we actually going to produce some more policy choices that will actually help America's economy get back on its feet and help taxpayers at the same time? That's a big question right now.
Can we, in a crisis time, set aside our differences and set aside the I gotta, you know, get my ideas across, or can we set it aside and say the crisis right now justifies us working together? We don't want to give socialist handouts, okay? We don't want to, but at the same time, we've got to do something significant. What should it be? How should we approach this? I guess there was a speaker that spoke at the RNC that kind of made this very clear contrast. The choice is ours. Communist tyranny versus capitalist republic. And I guess that goes a long way towards this discussion. Can we set aside our differences enough to get something done? First off, do you believe we can? And then secondly, do you believe we will?
Yeah, I think we can. I think we will, but I think it will be a pretty limited effort given the fact that we are now entering the home stretch of the presidential and congressional election season. You know, members of both parties will say they're willing to put policy above politics on behalf of the American people, but that can only go so far when an election is now about 2.5-3 months away. It's not going to be as easy as many people think it is. I do believe that if we start from the premise that the American people still need help from Washington as far as good policy decisions that can get the economy moving even faster than it has been, get businesses open again, get people back to work. Now, that's not necessarily a handout. That's not necessarily continuing the very generous unemployment benefits that have been taking place ever since March and April of this year. It means transitioning from those unemployment benefits into employment. That's the best way to help the American people. And fortunately, there are a lot of proposals out there among members of Congress to do things like, here is a $2 tax credit for every dollar of unemployment benefits if you take a job right now. I think that's a way to say to people, we want you to be able to get back to work, even if it means taking a job for the time being that wasn't necessarily paying as well as the one you might have lost earlier this year. What it means is providing the tax relief to businesses so that they will feel comfortable and safe right now and in the near term, opening up and staying open. We can design very narrow credits for that kind of thing, but we can also do long-term policies that say to businesses, no worries, you may not want to expand right now, but as long as you stay open and you want to make plans for 2-3 years down the horizon, you're going to have tax policy that will support your decisions or at least not get in your way.
Now, I want to look at this as objectively as I can. You know, there's a lot of proposals, as you mentioned. Have the National Taxpayers Union researched the proposals on the table, and what's the best way forward right now?
Yeah, there are
a lot of... We can do a nonpartisan discussion here, right?
Yes, we most certainly can. In fact, there are a number of them that are bipartisan in nature already on the table.
And the only reason I say nonpartisan as opposed to bipartisan is I want to bring along all the third party and the independent people, too. This is not a party discussion. This is not a divide discussion. This is a everybody needs to come to the table and set aside their differences discussion. And what is the best way forward, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. And I think one place to start, for example, would be the employee retention tax credit for businesses. Now, that is a program that was set up in the very first response to the COVID crisis called the CARES Act. And what that legislation does, this again is sponsored by Democrats and Republicans alike. You've got Susan DelBene, Democrat of Washington, Chris Pappas, Democrat of New Hampshire, John Katko, Republican of New York. They're going to increase the employee retention tax credit. It used to be 50% of $10,000 in wages per employees. They want to make it 80% of up to $15,000 in wages paid. They want to expand the number of businesses that can qualify for the employee retention tax credit. I think this is a good place to start. And to your point, Sam, I definitely think we should be saying nonpartisan. The point being, this is not just a bill being proposed by Republicans. This has a broad base of support, and that's really where we ought to be starting from when we want to make policy that's going to get the kind of backing it needs to get to the president's desk and get signed into law.
In the research you guys have done, what is the best way? I think one of the best ways personally is I look at my taxes and I say, hey, income tax, property tax, and employment tax are the biggest taxes I pay by far. Can't we start there?
Yes, certainly can. You know, that was the business side I was talking about. I think more needs to be done for businesses when it comes to expensing equipment and investments and hiring. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act did a good job of that, but many of those provisions regarding expensing, at least, are going to expire soon. But on the individual side, we need to start thinking about more income tax relief.
What if we just created tax-free Fridays and zero taxes were charged on Friday for anything?
Yeah.
No sales tax. No property tax, no whatever, and all you'd have to do is figure out whatever your property tax bill is, say it's over whatever period, divide it by the number of days, find out how many Fridays, and all you'd have to do is just cut everything by, hey, tax-free Fridays. You'd go buy your food on Fridays. You'd create the biggest economic boom you've ever seen in your life.
Well, and sure, and that could be pretty easy to calculate on the government side. I mean, if you want to do that for property taxes, well, then as you say, take 52 Fridays and divide that into 365.
Or if it's quarterly that you get taxed, or every 6 months, just adjust the math accordingly there. Back out the dollars. It'll be dead easy to accomplish. And you'd have tax-free Fridays for everybody.
Yes. Yes. Or if people are worried that that's going to drive out too many crowds and there's going to be problems with COVID, you could easily design a system where each individual taxpayer has a tax-free day that they can use to go shopping. There are a variety of ways you could implement something like that. But your point, the basic one is, one day a week, you get tax relief that reduces your bill to zero.
That's one way to do it. And I just bring it up because I know oftentimes when it's back to school, they're like, hey, we got tax-free shopping day or small business Saturday or whatever we have. And they get rid of some taxes for that and they try to help. But I'm just saying, if you were to top to bottom get rid of taxes on a given day, you'd give everybody, in essence, 1/7, well, because if you don't count Sundays, 1/6, whatever you want to call it, about a 15% benefit that way. The other way would be to simply abolish the IRS entirely.
Yeah, and that would take much more work, and I think it would get bogged down in Congress. So the solution you propose is very simple.
But when we come back, I want to know all the research you guys have done. What's the best way forward, and what are the most viable things on the table for real? My ideas might be good, but they're not really on the table for discussion. They're just Sam Bushman's wish list, right? And I appreciate how my wish list is really important and all that kind of stuff. But hey. What's the most viable? What's the most realistic, reasonable? What's being talked about? What really can we look forward to possibly happening? Pete Sepp answers in seconds.
Transport back in time to our nation's founding at the Freedom's Light Festival. Visit with freedom fighters, colonial artisans, music, contests, prizes, over 35 activities for the whole family. Schedule a school field trip and fulfill the federal requirement to teach the Constitution. Can you crack the spy codes used to win the Revolutionary War? Take home a founding document printed on the exact replica Isaiah Thomas used for the first Declaration of Independence. Register and compete in the Constitution Bowl. Join us September 17th through the 19th. Register at freedomslight.us. freedomslight.us. This event is completely free. Now more than ever, we need to ensure freedom's light is not extinguished. Let's keep this light shining in the hearts and minds of our children. Freedomslight.us. That's freedomslight.us.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused border agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, 4 grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved 4 checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
All right, Pete Sepp with us, president of the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. So as you study this, what are the most viable options from a realistic point of view of really making accomplishing the goal, if you will? And then secondly, what options are on the table that are realistically going to be seriously considered, Pete?
Well, I think we can start, for example, with a proposal from Congressman Kevin Brady. It's called the Reopening America by Supporting Workers and Businesses Act. What it does is allow unemployment beneficiaries who can return to work to keep up to 2 weeks of the supplemental federal unemployment benefits after accepting a job, and that's comparable to a $1,200 hiring bonus. There's a similar proposal in the Senate from Rob Portman of Ohio. That's the place to start to that, again, as I mentioned earlier, says to folks, we're going to support you going back to work because we believe that's the best possible value we can deliver for taxpayers and for workers. You know, we can continue the extensions of unemployment benefits, or we can create a new system, a temporary one, that says to people, we'd like you to return to work instead of just continue to collect unemployment benefits. And I think that sends a message to workers while we send a message to employers that we're going to support reopening America for business safely, responsibly, but as soon as we possibly can.
Well, Mr. Pete Sepp, the original right on the radio with us. Every time we have you, I always think of the days of old when we'd hear, we'd call and hear, this is a replica of Pete Sepp. But the original and the real thing is with us. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're not familiar with the National Taxpayers Union, you ought to be. NTU.org is their website. And we've watched them for years making a difference in one of the roughest places in the world to make a difference, Washington, D.C. You know, Pete, I don't know what else to add here except for, I don't know, maybe you have certain things on your agenda that you want to bring up, continue this topic or others. What else would you like to say to our listeners?
Well, certainly there are other proposals here. Senator Mitt Romney, actually, of Utah, has introduced something called a Patriot Pay, a proposal that would provide what he calls a temporary bonus for essential workers who stay on the job rather than either quit or have become unemployed. And this is, again, another way to avoid an open-ended extension of the federal unemployment benefit boost and provide a payroll tax credit that would for these bonuses that would be limited to employees of a certain income level. I think this is a way to offer alternatives to simply throwing more money at the problem. There is additional legislation sponsored by Democrats and Republicans that would allow millions of Americans who have flexible spending accounts to roll over their unspent money to next year so that they can use those tax advantage benefits for expenditures in 2021. Believe it or not, a lot of people have accumulated big balances in their flexible spending accounts during this crisis. Well, number one, because they haven't been able to get any daycare. Many folks have these accounts in order to fund daycare. The daycare centers have been closed, and so this money is sitting unused. They're going to lose it at the end of the year unless the law provides an extension to allow them to continue it. That serves taxpayers very well. And again, it has Democratic and Republican co-sponsors. I think that it would be important to start from that broad base, just as with these other proposals I've been talking about. And then this kind of builds on itself. If you can do a few small things together and cooperate, it helps to build a climate of trust that allows you to do some of the bigger things. And we have some big things on the agenda we need to worry about. Sam brought up one of them, property taxes. Many businesses are still getting property tax assessments in the mail, as well as homeowners, that don't reflect economic reality or, frankly, future economic reality. They're based on property values and income streams that no longer exist. We have to do something to address this problem with property taxes on a broad basis.
Well, I know many of these governments are going to be saying things like this. Hey, you know what? We'll melt down with government services if we can't you know, generate this revenue that we've been counting on. And my response is one of the biggest things that need to be done is we need to cut back the service level of government. And what we don't need to do is put the political things in your face to make it difficult so that, you know, you want to argue about it. But there's a lot of ways we could really reduce the size and scope of government at all levels. There's never been a better opportunity. It's almost like a blessing in disguise, Kurt, if we're wise about it. Kurt, first, well, then Pete.
Pete, may, I don't know if you've seen any of this, but over this whole COVID thing, the you know, schools have been closed down and everything else, but I haven't seen hardly any reports of government expenditures being cut back. In fact, you know, I've even seen some reports where they wanted more, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, you know, there should be a great opportunity for a lot less expense there. But, you know, what I wanted to really ask you now as you go forward, you know, with, I know we like to talk about solutions here, but, you know, if we get down to the real and you look at what's going on in the Capitol, Washington, D.C., and with the political, you know, the president's election and everything all coming up and all that stuff, what do you think you'll see happen before the election and or, you know, closely following it when it comes to these issues, Pete?
I think that what you're going to see is a very small legislative package, certainly not the size of the so-called HEROES Act that House Democrats passed, involving a couple trillion dollars of additional spending, if not more. It, you know, depends on how you read the provisions. It'll be something less probably than the so-called HEALS Act that the Republican-controlled Senate was working on before they threw up their hands and walked away. That alone was still several hundred billion dollars. I think what you'll probably see is an attempt to just extend some of the unemployment benefits, perhaps make another round of direct payments to individuals from the Treasury in the mail, and they'll want to call it a day. I hope that they'll consider some of the legislative proposals we've just been discussing because, again, they have a broad base of support. And if members of Congress really do care about the American people and an economic recovery and helping to respond to COVID, well, these kinds of bills that have support on both sides of the aisle ought to be able to pass as long as they're in session. We're going to try very hard to do that.
There's so many areas that they could make subtle changes that would make such a big difference. And I think that whatever we do, we've got a couple. The decrease in government services and or spending. And we've got to find out which government services and or spending would impact the citizenry the least. So foreign aid, for example, is a great one. We could just simply say we don't have the ability to provide all this foreign aid around the world. Now, that won't negatively affect an American citizen. Really at all. In fact, it might be better to stay out of harm's way there. But if we cut expenditures, then the need for government money won't be so great. And then as a result, as they kind of pare back the taxes and the hit to the American people, if you will, things will get better. And I'm afraid that oftentimes when we discuss this, they don't really tie the two together, do they, Pete?
No, they rarely do. And there is still plenty of waste, fraud, and abuse that needs to be addressed in government. But more to your point, there needs to be a resetting of priorities. And as Kurt was mentioning, the schools have been dramatically slowed down in the way they operate, closed. The online instruction has been anywhere from pretty good to non-existent, depending on what area of the country that you're in. School bus fleets are idle. Schools as facilities are only barely maintained. Maybe this is a time for us to explore how we provide education more efficiently and effectively and giving parents more control over how instruction occurs.
National Taxpayers Union, one of the greatest think tanks in America, NTU.org. The president, Pete Sepp, with us, continuing in seconds on your radio.
protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Hurricane Laura making landfall near Cameron, Louisiana, with maximum sustained winds of 150 miles an hour. Those winds weakening a bit in the past hour, and parts of southeast Texas are thankful to have been missed by the worst of the storm. Jefferson County spokesperson Allison Getz says the Golden Triangle region around Beaumont was extremely lucky.
We're praying for the folks in Louisiana who have seemed to have sustained a significant damage during the storm. I don't know why, but it appears like we've dodged the bullet.
California firefighters making progress in their battle against wildfires as tens of thousands continue to evacuate. Over 700 fires have started in the state in the past 2 weeks, and seven people have died in the fires. This is USA Radio News.
Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
I am very pleased with your product. I haven't been sick since I've been taking this, and I contribute a lot of my energy and my health to your product, and I just want to keep taking it. So, yes, just keep making it, okay? I just thank God for your company.
Balance of Nature is now offering 35% off on any new preferred order. Go to balanceofnature.com today and use discount code USA.
While you have free time and you're sitting at home and you ponder what kind of gifts to buy for someone, PatriotDepot.com has you covered, from puzzles, games, novelty items. If you're looking for some unique style items when it comes to the president, for more, you can check out PatriotDepot.com. Call 844-377-8052. That's 844-377-8052 or PatriotDepot.com. Use promo code USA.
Economic reports released this morning, one of them showing the number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits did drop by 98,000 last week to 1 million. But economist Joel Naroff says there are still jobs being lost.
The next employment report will be released on September 4th, and given the high number of job losses, it could be a lot less than hoped for.
Meanwhile, the nation's economy did not slow down as much in the second quarter as analysts had predicted, but it still contracted quite a bit, the second reading on GDP. During the second quarter, down 31.7% on an annual basis, experts had predicted about a 32.5% drop. And in still more economic news, Fed Chair Jerome Powell is giving Wall Street investors a reason to keep the red-hot markets going, announcing that the Fed will allow inflation to run hotter than it normally would to help the nation recover. And this is USA Radio News.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
All right, Pete Sepp with us, National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org, one of the greatest think tanks on tax reform, appropriately paying taxes that are necessary versus out-of-control expenditures we got to reject. How do you strike an appropriate balance? Not only do we need to talk about reducing government expenditures at the same time as how to bring back the economy, one of the great ways I think this could be done, Pete Sepp, is this. You know, education is important, but education is a great example to highlight what the changes are. The expenditures for education have reduced drastically. As you mentioned, buildings barely being maintained. As you mentioned, school buses basically being shut down and not needed. Same thing's true with the economy and people working from home. You know what? If people work from home a whole lot more, we don't need near as much road maintenance because, hey, the roads aren't being destroyed so fast. I can go on and on about that. But my point is, you know, what we need to do is encourage behavior and promote behavior that creates less of a demand for systems and services and et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's one of the great keys that we can work on, you know, working from home. I'm not suggesting it should be mandated, but I am suggesting it's one of the great ways to say, hey, it'll slow the spread of the coronavirus. It's not a forced thing. It will decrease the roads. It'll decrease the, you know, spewing toxins into the environment. It will, and all I'm saying is, as we do more of this, we don't need near the infrastructure build out. We don't need near the maintenance and the costs and the, can't we look at, and has the NTU already looked at, saying as we make these changes, what changes have the biggest impact on the less need for money and expenditures. Because I think that's one of the great equations too, right?
Yeah, definitely so. And here's where a lot of state and federal tax policy can come in, because there's an issue that's very complex and has been bandied about for probably 50 years now, and has been especially intense over the last 10 years, called tax nexus. What do you do when a business might be located in one city or in one state, whereby the workers are in another city or another state and often work remotely? What does that mean for taxation? Whose income gets taxed where? Whose profit gets taxed where? And this has become especially acute during the COVID-19 crisis. We've put out a lot of information and have been monitoring legislation at the state and federal level to try to clarify these nexus issues so that there are good rules of the road that will enable telework and remote work without a lot of tax obstacles and tax regulations weighing people down. There's an issue brief on our website by our foundation. It's the Interstate Commerce Initiative, and it's called A Legislative Framework for Addressing Remote Work Nexus Issues. We're tracking legislation in upwards of a dozen and a half states affecting individuals and businesses about how they want to change the way remote work is taxed. There's a bill in Congress, again, Democratic and Republican co-sponsors. It's called the Mobile Workforce State Income Tax Simplification Act, a mouthful, but basically what it does is it sets down limits on how states can claim a slice of the tax of remote workers. In other words, a remote worker has to have worked in a state for at least 30 days before the state can make a claim of tax. That's a very important thing because it keeps states from saying, aha, you passed through our jurisdiction for a few days last year. We want a slice of your money. Same way with the Business Activity Tax Simplification Act, also called BATSA, another mouthful, but the basic problem is to make sure that business income, when it is earned at the state level, is taxed by only one state at a time. States do not get multiple bites of the same apple. These are more important bills than ever. They've been on the table in Congress for 10, even 20 years, but now they're especially important. We need to think about these questions, get this legislation passed now, so that we create that environment that you were just speaking about, Sam.
This brings up the question, because President Trump has put out a payroll tax executive order, and a lot of people are wondering, hey, how are people going to be affected by this? It's a very complicated, in my opinion, way to go about it. I get the president's need to act. At the same time, it can be very complicated quick, right?
Oh, yes, very much so, because this is an executive order that allows the deferral of certain payroll taxes between September 1 and December 31 of this year. And deferral is an important word because it doesn't mean that nobody has to pay those taxes between September 1 and December 31. It simply means that you can pay them later. And many folks and their employers have a decision to make here, because this is not a mandatory executive order. It's an executive order allowing the voluntary deferral of certain payroll taxes. An employer may decide, I'm not going to do it for anybody, so I'm just going to keep withholding and remitting to government all of the payroll taxes that I, as the employer, have to pay and the employee does.
Because the big problem with this is this idea that it's temporary, this idea that it may be forced to pay back later by somebody, somewhere, somehow. It's this uncertainty, in my opinion, that becomes the Achilles heel of this thing, right?
Yes, yes. And, you know, there's a whole question of whether the executive branch has the authority to do this long term. Certainly, it can do so in the case of an emergency, which is what's happening now, and the executive branch has deferred payment of these taxes in the past. But can they defer collection of the taxes? Can they defer actual repayment of the taxes and say, you know what, next year, don't even worry about paying them back? That is a big open legal question. It's one reason why Congress should have stepped in and clarified this, but they didn't. The president, again, felt he had to take action.
Well, and the defer word is what scares me, though. We don't need deferment. What we don't need is later people feeling like they're on the hook. This is what plagued the PPP and the EIDL loans and these things, where people don't have certainty about what's expected of them, and people are hesitant, and people took the money thinking it's a windfall and went out and spent money on boats and cars and things they probably shouldn't have, and now they're going to have to pay the piper for that. And the problem is this uncertainty. Whatever we do, we need to make it consistent and certain to where people know what to count on and what to expect coming out of the other end of this thing. If you don't, you will have nothing but confusion and nothing but the lack of compliance and frustration and anger. And what you may do is temporarily boost the economy only to take a greater penalty on the other end.
Yes, exactly. And this is why smart policymaking would have been clear from the beginning about whether this was deferral or whether this was actual forgiveness of payment. It would have been something that was communicated widely. It would have been robust, and it would have been put into statutory law rather than executive order. We didn't get any of those things, and the result is predictable, a lot of confusion.
What if we just said on your income tax, you're going to back out $1,000 per person every year for the next 10 years and your family that you're responsible for? In other words, your dependents, just whatever you owe on your taxes, just back it out. And if there's a number that the government owes you, the government's not going to pay you, but they are going to let you use that going forward. And really what we'd be doing is basically negating the income tax for the most part for most people.
Yeah, and you know, you make an interesting point, Sam, because we focused so much on temporary measures, send out a round of checks from the Treasury, provide a credit that will last for this year and perhaps next. But what is it that the American people really need right now? I think they need some kind of long-term assurance that even if we get a vaccine and things wax and wane, and then there's a COVID-20 that comes along and threatens America, no matter what's ahead, you're going to have more financial resources to take care of your family. What if we sent that message and said, we're not talking about months. We're not talking about 2021. We're talking about years.
And we're also not talking about today you get a benefit, tomorrow you get nailed for it. You get hung out the dry. It's going to be consistent long enough to make sure that, hey, there's no benefit today and you know, I don't know what to say, economic destruction tomorrow or at the end of this thing. It's going to be long-term enough and stable enough to where, hey, you can work your way out of this. All the benefits you get now can be worked through later, too. That certainty has got to be part of this. That consistency,
yeah.
That long-term view has got to be a component of this thing.
Yes, absolutely. I think that the confidence that people had in the future of years and years has been undermined. Policy has to address that.
All right, NTU has two articles on their website. I want to bounce off Pete Sepp in a second. First one, Paul Biggs legislation would expand HSA options for millions. We'll talk about it.
Dad, can you make him stop?
Honey, he needs to practice.
He's been at it an hour.
Well, just trying to be patient.
Dad, it sounds like a cat calling for help or something.
Worse, a basement full of cats.
Yeah.
You know, hon, it is a little hard on the ears.
Not you, too.
Well, maybe we can all play a game. Andrew, do you want to play a board game? How about we watch a video? Hide and seek? Oh, I don't know, I give up.
Maybe we could all just sneak out of the house.
Honey, he's 9 years old. We can't leave him home alone.
And
we can make him practice with a sock.
Well, I guess we'll have to get some ice cream.
Did I hear someone say ice cream?
Family, isn't it about time?
Oh,
I see the practice hasn't hurt your ears.
Well, I'm a serious musician.
Funny that you never seem to get better on that thing.
Works every time.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Hey, where'd all these cats come from?
I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. As a teenager, I gave my first public speech in my church. My hand shook, my heart pounded. I thought to myself, I can't do this, but somehow I did, and because I wanted to talk about things that were important, I persisted. I chided my church as a senior in high school for not seeming to care about the not yet born, for looking the other way, and for not taking a stand on life.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
All right, Paul Biggs' legislation would expand HSA options for millions. First, Pete, give people a 30-second on what an HSA is. It's a health savings account, right?
Yeah. A health savings account, of course, is a tax-free way for Americans to set aside dollars to pay for certain health care expenditures. It's like a flexible spending account, only there are bigger limits, more options, and it's not necessarily tied to an employer. So HSAs are a great way for families and individuals to provide for their own health care while not having to be taxed on those dollars. Well, there are still restrictions on HSAs, though, and they seem especially ill-suited for the problems we're facing now. You have to have, if you want an HSA, what's called a high-deductible health plan. An insurance bare bones coverage with a very high deductible, as the term indicates. There are also still contribution limits to the HSA that don't necessarily make it attractive. And you can't use HSA dollars to pay for other insurance premiums. Well, that doesn't make much sense either. This legislation from Senator Rand Paul and Congressman Andy Biggs, so there are bills in both the House and Senate, would expand HSA options, clear away those barriers I just mentioned, and make health savings accounts more attractive and available to millions more Americans. It's a smart move. We should be doing it now.
Kurt, you want to respond to this? I brought up, I think, a lot of ideas and concepts that I think are important. HSAs are important right now when people have a lot of health problems, whether it be corona-based or whether it be, because of the corona, we can't get the health care we need. Putting money in people's health care accounts and giving flexible options is important. Now, I personally don't think they ought to have these health care accounts that control people's money in the first place. You should be able to use your money for whatever you need. But one of the greatest ways we can help people right now is in all these government-specific expenditure regulated things is to open them up and make them more flexible, whether it be a 401k or an IRA or a health savings account or whatever else. One of the great ways is to make these things more flexible and more usable for folks without penalties and without complications. Kurt?
So you're kind of saying you're a little bit pro-choice, Sam, is what you're saying?
As long as you don't add pro-death to that mix, absolutely,
yeah,
sir.
Good point. So you're basically saying that people ought to be able to choose what they want their money to be used for? I mean, imagine that kind of idea going on in Washington, D.C., Pete.
Yeah, imagine. It happens every once in a while, but certainly not enough.
I don't know how many of these ideas are real. In other words, they're good ideas, Pete. We're having a great conversation. I think we're being fair. We're being nonpartisan. We're opening up options and creating ideas. How much of this is really making it to Congress? Are they really even discussing this, or are they just too busy fighting about elections to get anything done?
No, I think that there's enough discussion here. These are good bills that have been drafted, have been cleared through legislative council. bills that we have studied at National Taxpayers Union, bills that are gaining co-sponsors every day from Republicans as well as Democrats, bills that have often been already the subject of hearings in committee, bills that can be easily folded into larger packages and complement each other. These are serious proposals. Am I saying that members of Congress are ready to do this right away? Well, no, they take pushing and they take input, I think, from the American people who say, look, when you come back in September and October, these are the things that need to be at the top of your agenda. Just tone down the election year rhetoric for a few days. That's all we're asking. A few days so you can do what you need to finally get these bills passed through your chamber. The big, major work of drafting the bills and in some cases getting hearings on these bills has already happened. All you need to do now is follow through.
I mean, imagine Congress following through. I don't know about that, Pete. I mean, Washington, D.C. following through, that's a kind of a
tall
big,
orders around
big,
here.
It's not easy. You know, hey, they did it in 2017 with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. They did it last year with the Taxpayer First Act. They've done it with things like the Data Act. They've done it with other no-brainer bills that we've supported. They can do it again.
Yeah, but this time, Pete, you've got the possible reelection of Donald J. Trump, which, as far as I can see, is, well, I've never seen any group completely opposed to basically anything that might make him look good, both in the media and in the swamp, if you will, where you reside.
All right.
Don't you see a big difference there?
The only thing you can do to counter a huge force like that is to make Democrats look good at the same time. And that's why you have to pick bills that have Democratic supporters and get those passed, you know, ones that have Democratic and Republican supporters, get those passed because you remove the partisanship or at least minimize the partisanship of the bill that's at issue. That's how we got, for example, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights passed in 1988, which was a viciously partisan environment between George H.W. Bush and Michael Dukakis. We were able to make sure that Democrats and Republicans in Congress got enough credit for passing that bill that it didn't matter who got credit.
In other words, we got to jettison the idea. We got to jettison the idea that I win, you lose. And we've got to have this idea of how can we all benefit? How can we serve the American people? And one of the reasons that I brought up about what people are doing in Washington, one, I want to know what's being done and what we can support and all that kind of stuff. But on your website, ntu.org, and I mentioned that because I really want people to go there and start to get involved and become active, ntu.org. But on ntu.org, there's a headline that says NTU, National Taxpayers Union, endorses 7 good government bills from RSC Gear Tax Force. Is that what it is?
Yes.
All right. What's RSC Gear Task Force first, and then let's talk about the bills.
Yeah, it's from the Republican Study Committee, which is a conservative caucus in the House of Representatives, and GEAR stands for Government Efficiency, Accountability, and Reform Task Force. And they have come up with a whole list, 7 no-brainer bills that, again, ought to be appealing to Democrats as well as Republicans to make government more efficient, less wasteful. Here's one of them, the Guidance Out of Darkness or GOOD Act. It would require federal agencies to publish all of their non-regulatory guidance documents in a single location online. Now, the president has already issued an executive order in this regard, but the agencies are pushing back. They are saying, believe it or not, we can't find all the non-regulatory guidance we published and put it in one place. This bill would lend Congress's authority behind it and say, you've got to do this. And it's so important, especially for small business owners, to know what kind of non-regulatory guidance is out there, because this is the way federal agencies flex their muscles against everyday Americans. They, you know, even a person who's well-versed in formal federal regulations, like surrounding the workplace, safety regulations, and then suddenly some inspector with OSHA, the federal agency, comes in and says, well, wait, you didn't read this guidance document we published 3 years ago saying that you have to provide X number of washing stations for your employees, and they have to be this high off the ground. We're going to cite you for a violation. That kind of nonsense needs to stop, and this is the kind of legislation that can stop it.
Pete, real quick, one of these times I have to tell you about the story about when I was out selling my honey and I got the one of these bureaucrats like you're talking about came up and said that my honey was embargoed. I was
embargoed.
Like, oh, what's that mean? Anyway, so it's a long story, but the bottom line is it's right how there's, you know, these armies of bureaucrats that can basically just shut down business and progress everywhere, aren't there?
Yeah, there absolutely are. And there's another bill in this package, the Eliminate Agency Excess Space Act. There are something like 10,000 excess federal properties that are unutilized or underutilized by their government tenants. The General Services Administration gets in the way of selling off those properties. We have to remove that roadblock. This is a bill that would do so. I mean, even now, we need to make sure, especially now, we need to make sure that the federal government isn't holding on to properties it doesn't need.
Well, it's surprising to me that Congress, and they've created a coalition that's already got this much done, though. When you think about seven bills that are no-brainers, that are seven good government bills that NTU has already been able to review, understand, and endorse and support, and seven bills, people have already done all the work, people have built the coalition, people have built the you know, the nonpartisan work to get this done, that this already is in place and exists. I don't know how many people know that, but that's where the people need to understand, get knowledge of, and start to push. Because
yeah,
that seven bills
absolutely.
Could then be 30 bills, and then could be, and we could start to really get behind answers, solutions.
Yes.
For crying out loud, Pete.
That's exactly right. And these make small, tiny steps of progress individually. Collectively, they make a pretty big step. But as you said, pass these seven bills first, and then suddenly we're passing 10, 20, 30, 40. And then we're making huge steps toward restoring the constitutional government that we all want.
Wow. It sounds so easy, Pete.
It is not easy, but it is feasible if we stay focused, if we work hard, and hard work has the benefit of paying off and showing that if you do it even more, if you continue it, you're going to have even more success. It builds on itself.
But when you say it's not easy, but it's feasible, I want to take that feasible point a little further and say not only feasible, it's probable if enough people get involved. In other words, if you had 5 million Americans literally saying in unison, pass the seven, pass the seven. People are like, what the heck is past the seven? And then pretty soon, past the seven means let's have nonpartisan reform and let's do it now. The people demand it. The people need it. Past the seven. Okay? Past the seven. And you could literally instantly overnight create a groundswell to make this not only possible, not only feasible, but probable, Pete.
Yes, exactly. That's all it takes. And that's a fantastic slogan. And I'm going to pass that along to the sponsors of the bill.
I don't need credit. I'm just an American, buddy. We just need to get this done. That's all I'm saying. My friend, we appreciate you and your leadership and all that you guys do.
Well, thank you very much. And Godspeed to you guys. You are the voice of America's taxpayers.
Thank you, sir. Pete Sepp, National Taxpayers Union. Kurt, I'm telling you, we watched these guys for decades, and they do some of the best work. I'm just telling you right now, pass the seven, Kurt.
Couldn't have said it.
I don't want to pass the ammunition like the writers. I just want to pass the seven. God save the Republic.